On today's episode, Ashley Ambers, the creator of the Middle Finger Project. The name is bold, the mind behind it is brilliant, and she's with me today to dialogue on conversation. Ashley, what's up?
TK, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing real well. How about yourself?
Oh, good. I'm so excited to talk to you.
I got to tell you, I've been blogging for about 2 years now. And before I started blogging, I was reading yours, and I have to credit you.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It was there's another blog I read called In Over Your Head. His name's Julian Smith, and he actually referenced you, and I was like, oh, he said you were a really good writer, so I went over to your page and started looking at your stuff, and you spoke to me in the way that I needed to be spoken to. Like, you did it for me, you know? It was like how Whitney Houston sings to me. You wrote to me. And
That's the best compliment I've ever got.
Yeah, I was like, write to me, girl. So you know, so I credit you with, you know, helping me kind of break out of my shell a little bit and you know, kind of start doing my thing.
Well, I love you. I mean, you have a lot of followers already for only 2 years. It's really impressive.
Hey, I appreciate it. So I know that every interview you will ever do for the rest of your life, you'll probably be asked to explain the Middle Finger Project, and I have to do it again. So I have to ask
That's
you,
fine.
Like, what's the Middle Finger Project all about, and what made you choose that name?
Okay, sure. But before I answer that question, let me know. I mean, I got a vibe from your site that was very, it's a little bit more on the PG side, right? So I should kind of censor myself a little bit?
No. I know who you are, and if I needed PG, I would have skipped right over your name.
All right, good. Just in case, because you never know what's going to come flying out of my mouth.
Yeah, hey, go for it. Go for it. Be you, please.
Cool. Well, TK, I will tell you that TMS Project started in 2009 really just as a platform to connect people who were sick of doing the same shit every single day of their life,
mm-hmm.
And who really wanted to do something more with their careers, with themselves, and do something that they felt proud to be doing. So it started off as a platform in that sense, and then I started to notice a trend, and that trend was primarily that everyone that was thinking about their lives and careers and what they wanted to be doing, a lot of them wanted to start their own small businesses. So that seemed to be the direction that a lot of the people that were in the community were kind of heading towards. And I started pulling my experience in the past, which is what I actually used to do as a career myself in corporate America, was PR and marketing. So it really started to fall into place as I started to help these people with their small businesses and ideas, and, you know, everything from naming to the message behind their company to pricing to, you know, what their offerings are and everything. And so it evolved that way, and now presently it's a site for the aspiring small business owner who is still tired of it and they want to do their own thing. So here they come to TMS Project to get advice, to get support, and to get the kick in the ass that they need to make it happen.
Wow.
How's that sound, TK?
Hey, that sounds beautiful. You know, it's funny you said to me that that you asked permission to go beyond the PG, because there's something I want to thank you for, actually, and I want to talk with you about it for a minute. You recently wrote a post called Caution, Do Not Pitch Yourself Like This Ever, you know, where you had an email that you received from someone who was basically pitching their product in a pretty ineffective way, and you were trying to save us all from repeating this mistake. For my listeners, for my listeners, I want to read to them part of your commentary. You say, you say, in order to get some ass, you've got to kiss some ass. I don't care if that feels icky to you. I don't care if you're too good for that. I don't care if you don't think you have time for that. The fact of the matter is that you're dealing with human beings, and human beings like getting their ass kissed. If you're going to ask them to do something for free, you need to be giving something for free, or at least help them see why it's incredibly beneficial for them or their audience in some way, shape, or form. Why is it in their best interest and not just yours? Nobody owes you anything. even if the little pink book and its website were the hottest, newest, most mind-blowing shit on the market, and Steve Jobs himself came back from the motherfucking dead to write the motherfucking foreword, I still don't care. Nobody owes you anything. And if you take that approach, guess what? You won't get anything. You know, you blew my mind.
That what? Delivery was fantastic. I mean, I think you read it way better than it even sounded in my head.
You should hire me to come, you know, read all the blogs for you. You know, that's how I heard it.
I like it. It was great.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so I have to thank you for that, for the following reason. You know, like, I read a lot of self-help literature, a lot of personal development, a lot of books on entrepreneurship, and I have been wanting for so long, Ashley, for someone to just dare to swear, for someone to go ahead and make the off-color joke. And not for the sake of just being controversial as if it's intrinsically cool to swear, but, you know, when I experience my problems in life, the voice inside of my head, it doesn't say, oh, gee. It doesn't say, oh, my. It says, oh, shit. You know? You know what I'm saying? You know, like my inner demons drop F-bombs all the time. And I imagine that that's true for a lot of other people, too, you know? And I came to the conclusion a long time ago that if I'm going to defeat my own inner bullshit, I've got to be able to speak to that bullshit in the language that it understands. And you are one of the few people out there right now that's speaking to me, and I imagine so many others, in the language that our bullshit can understand. So, like, I've got so much respect for you for that, and I appreciate you for that. And I just want to thank you for being willing to go there in how you express yourself.
Well, thank you. And you know what? I'm going to turn this into a teaching point because, honestly, at the end of the day, think about the difference when you're in the boardroom with a whole bunch of corporate executives and you're having a conversation there. And then think about what that same conversation would look like if you happen to be down at the local pub sharing a round of beers. The conversation is completely transformed. And in, you know, in the pub, you're a lot more relaxed. It's a lot easier to talk about things. You don't have that same pressure. And as a result, you end up making a much better connection with those same board of executives that you were trying to impress, because you can kind of relax a little bit. And so for me, I think that's why PMS is so successful. But also, you know, for anyone out there who's starting to do their own thing, it's really good to note, you know, especially from a copywriting perspective, you know, talk to people like they're people and not like they're corporate board executives, you know, calling all the shots, because you're calling all the shots, not them.
Okay, so here's a follow-up to that brilliant wisdom you just spewed. All right, so, like, the fear of backlash, I mean, that is legitimate, right? You know, like, we see all the time in the celebrity world where even a comedian just makes the wrong joke on the wrong day to the wrong crowd. And, like, if it was a different day, it might have sold. A different context, different crowd, it might have not gotten them into trouble. But, like, the wrong joke on the wrong day, the wrong swear word to the wrong crowd, and they're done. They lose their sponsors. They lose their customers. And so everybody wants to feel authentic. Everybody wants to say what they mean and just be real. And at the same time, you know, people kind of have this legitimate fear of, you know, of corporate backlash, customer backlash, or whatever you want to call it. What advice can you offer for how we can navigate that challenge?
Well, first of all, my first comment is simply that, are any of those comedians that are getting backlash, did they die? Did they lose their funny? Did they lose their business? Maybe they lost the sponsor, but wasn't really the best sponsor for them anyway. And my second thought to that is, I really genuinely believe that you can only go as far and be successful as the farthest envelope you're willing to push. That's the only way you can find your edge. You have to push past that boundary because that's where the edge is. Right? So if you kind of hang out, you know, what's like a basketball term? never mind, I won't even go there. But if you hang out 10 feet before the edge of the cliff, you know, you're not going to get to see the amazing views that everyone else is doing when they're standing there at the edge pushing their own boundaries. And that's just a really ridiculous analogy for what I'm trying to say here.
No,
is that it's not optional. It's absolutely
has anybody ever, like,
pushing your own edge.
has anybody ever like sent you like an email or made a phone call to you or whatever and been like, Ashley, you really pushed it too far this time. You offended me. You ever got that kind of feedback?
Honestly, I think people are scared to email me.
That's it right there. Like, be so on the edge that you're too scary to give feedback to, negative feedback at least.
You know, honestly, I can count on one hand the number of times someone has emailed me, less than that. And really, the only time it really sticks out for me was when I had written a post at one point years ago talking about growing up on food stamps and on government assistance and living in a trailer. And this person really just wanted to kind of debate the merits of government assistance and made it into more of a political, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they had thought that I maybe came from some kind of a hedge fund or like some kind of inheritance, or, you know, mommy and daddy were maybe funding my business or my trip around the world, and it turned into one of those discussions. I don't appreciate when people make erroneous, you know, when they show up in my inbox, a lot of times I can just ignore them. But sometimes, if I get an email like that, I feel like you're stepping on my private property and walking right into my living room and telling me that I'm an asshole. So I'm going to write you back. You know what I mean? Like, I don't let that stuff fly. But I really don't get a lot of that backlash, no. And that's the thing. When you put yourself out there and you're confident about it, you're going to attract the right people that get the same thing that you said to me. I was looking for someone just like you. And yes, there are thousands of people that have unsubscribed from my blog and want nothing to do with me. But that's okay, because we wouldn't be hanging out in person anyway. You don't walk around the entire earth trying to make everyone your friend. And the same thing applies for business. You shouldn't try to walk around the entire earth and make everyone your customer. Bam!
With the sound effect. You know,
bam!
Okay,
that's left over from the 4th of July.
Yeah, that definitely deserved a bam. That was pretty deep. Let's talk about the assumptions that people make about your background. It's so easy to look at someone like yourself. You were director of PR for AWeber.
Right.
You know, you've written for people like Adrian Peterson. And that's apart from all the amazing things you're doing with TMF right now. So it's easy for people to look at you and be like, oh, man, she must have had it easy. She must have just had, like, venture capital just being, you know, poured down her throat. But that's not the case. You wrote on your blog how you created your first product while you were homeless and living in your car out of a Kmart parking lot in the slums of South Philly.
Yeah, that was a trip.
Yeah. So you know, I want to talk to you about that. For my audience, I want to read another excerpt. This will be my second audition for you, Ashley. this comes from a post you wrote called Defiance or Defeat, You Pick. And you say, sometimes you find yourself living out of your car, storing all of your toiletries in an oversized red purse, lodging sweatshirts in between headrest and sunroof panels to block the windows so you can sleep, explaining to unsympathetic credit card companies that you can't pay your $41 minimum payment because you've got negative $12 in your bank account, having borderline nervous breakdowns over what Equifax is going to have to say about all of this, showering once every other day whenever someone is kind enough to let you use their water, subsisting on coffee and McDonald's snack wraps, and finally starting to grasp why the homeless have a reputation for being alcoholics. Hey, is that real? Is that true?
Yeah, that whole scenario was true for sure.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little more?
Sure. That was just a series of bad decisions that kind of culminated into one big train wreck. But it was interesting because I was successful prior to that. I had a successful professional career. From when I was young, I went on to, you know, have really been very humbled to have some great experiences. I had a nice full scholarship to college, actually based on entrepreneurial potential, was actually the scholarship from the founder of Monster.com. He grew up in rural Pennsylvania as well, so he wanted to give back. So that really started me off on a great path. And from there, I worked really hard, as I always had. And, you know, I think at the time I was living off student loans or something like that. I don't have, any relative. I haven't found a delicate way to say that yet. But right, so I had to make it happen myself. So I think at the time I was living off student loans primarily. And then I graduated and I did have a really successful professional career for a while until I was one of those people that I talked about in the beginning that was just so disappointed and disillusioned. And I couldn't figure out how is this possible that I work so hard for this, and this is what we're all working so hard for. And it just felt like a huge big letdown. The real world was a big letdown. And I know, you know, people everywhere around me said, well, get used to it. This is just the way life works. And I refused to accept that. I didn't like that. And I thought it was just a coward way of settling. So that's why I started TMF Project. But while I was still kind of in transition before TMF, well, you know, I started the blog right around the same time. Things just, they went south. And I was waiting. You know, I'd gotten a new gig, and I was working on my own, doing a lot of freelance PR, but I didn't have the platform that I do today. So I was, you know, trying to hustle it and make it happen, and I was waiting to get paid for a job, a big job. It was going to take about 2 weeks, and I didn't have any more money. I ran out. I didn't have any more credit. I had no more money, and I didn't know what to do. You know, I can't call up my dad or my mom and say, hey, loan me some money, and I've got too much pride to ask my friends, I suppose, so... That culminated in that circumstance. I was like, you know what? This is not me. What is this? This is not me. I gotta get out of here. So I leveraged the blog I'd been building and figured out a way to bring value and get people to pay me for it. So that's how it first started way back in the beginning.
Wow! 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 Bam! That gets another bam for sure.
What a powerful story. Parking lot, and we are acquainted, and I hate that parking lot. It's actually down by the stadium here in Philadelphia, on Oregon Avenue in Philadelphia. And every time I've had to drive by, if I ever go to a Phillies game or anything, I take a moment. Crazy.
How long were you living on that parking lot?
I would say it was off and on for about 2 weeks. Those 2 weeks.
One minute is long enough.
It was hard because I do have friends, you know, you've got friends that you could stop by. I think I had stayed for a night or so with a girlfriend, Christina, who she actually had moved out of her house, but she owned it. So she was still renting it to a roommate, and she arranged with the roommate to let me go and stay for a night. But then the roommate got really freaked out. And couldn't understand, you know, why I was going through such a hard time. So I had to leave there. I had gone to another girlfriend's house for a night, but she was living with her boyfriend, who was living with someone else who had a roommate. So it was also just, you know, not something that they could really offer me. So, yeah, it was kind of off and on for a couple of weeks there where I was trying to do what I could do.
Well, and one thing I know, I know you weren't, like, sitting in the car at the Kmart parking lot, like, okie doke, I'm just going to pump out these blogs and blow it up and just get rich. Like I'm sure you were dealing with some serious demons at that time.
Okie doke.
You know, you just pulling out the laptop. It's all good. It's all good. It's what Steve Jobs went through. You know, so how did you do it? Like the emotional side of it, like, how did you do it, Ashley?
You know what? I get angry. I get angry when I know I can do better, and I failed myself. So I was more in anger mode than anything else. But I'm also very impulsive. So what happened was, you know, I decided to offer this, you know, this book that I really wanted to write, and I did it as a pre-sale, you know, to my audience at the time. I said, hey, you know, here's what I want to do. If you're willing to back in advance, you know, you'll get it delivered on X day. So, you know, at the time I had a really small audience, and, you know, I can't remember the exact figure, but I think maybe that sale resulted in about $2,000. And what I did was I sold my car. I didn't even have money to put gas in the damn thing. So I sold my car, and I literally, within a couple of days, went to the airport, and I bought a ticket, and I went to Chile. The reason why I went to Chile is because I had been there in 2009 through school, when I was pursuing a master's degree. And I had a really great opportunity with the United Nations and the Ministry of Education of Chile, so I was there for 10 weeks. And I had made a couple of friends, but I knew that the cost of living was really low there. So I made a plan. I hatched a plan. I got on a plane and went and stayed with a friend in Chile for the interim, and I started hustling to get more business and do what I was, you know, had doing before, PR and things like that. But your dollar goes a long way there as opposed to living here. So I did that very deliberately, and I built TMS from Chile.
Wow. And you know, I know that fear and all of the other so-called darker emotions are something you've stared at in the face. So this leads me to my next question. You say fear is like sex. I love that you made that comparison, but I want to know what you mean by that. How is fear like sex?
Oh, my God. When did I say that? It had to be years ago. I'm not even registering. Saying that.
That's so awesome. That's
like
so
sex.
Awesome.
Well,
you know, here's the full quote. You say, fear is like sex, orgasmic and reproductive. Does that help?
Oh, you know what? You're looking at a post from Kelly Deal. I didn't write that post. You. That's why I don't remember saying that, because Kelly wrote that post.
Oh.
And I remember publishing that. I had a column at one point called Fear Exposed, and what I really wanted to do was invite guest authors to write about their real fears, you know, really what they were scared about that they wouldn't admit to anybody. And Kelly wrote that post for us at the time, but I remember loving that analogy as well. Fear is like sex reproductive. Is that what you said?
Just one more way to bring sex into the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I can comment on that and say that I do think it is reproductive. The more scared you are of something, and the more you let it be scary, then it does reproduce. It just keeps going and going and going. And it's so creepy how fear is not real. It's just something that you make up in your head. And it does. Just sometimes it can overwhelm you. And I think the goal is to not let that happen, but, you know, it's much easier said than done, right?
Absolutely. One of my Facebook readers wants to know, how do you factor spirituality and the welfare of the planet into what you do?
You know what? I hate this question because I don't consider myself a spiritual person at all, and I'm just throwing that out there. I'm not spiritual. I'm not. And it's weird because so many of my readers are. I'm not sure why I attract that particular type of person. Well, I might be more spiritual than I say, but it's not really my thing. But, you know, we do a lot of stuff. Like right now, I am so, so excited because we're shifting to some bigger and better things. I've got another company on its way called Life Hookie. We're in the process of registering the trademarks and getting all that stuff taken care of. But that's really going to be retreats, international retreats for people who are, you know, the same person who reads TMS. There's the person who's just pissed off at where they've gotten so far. And as a part of that, what I would like to do, the big plan is take a portion of those proceeds and put it into a nonprofit fund, because what I really want to do at the heart of my heart, which I'm making a phrase, is take that money and donate it back. I want to start some type of a fund to give American students the opportunity that I had when I was young to study abroad. Now, I studied abroad in Costa Rica for the first time when I was in college because of the scholarship that I got. You know, they paid for everything, room, board. They gave me a laptop and things like that. And I would never, ever have been able to afford something like that. So I'm really looking forward to replicating that experience for others in the future, because I think it's so important, and it could change their life forever. I want to do that. So maybe that's a good answer, but I'm not spiritual at all.
You know, I'll tell you, Ashley, if I had to choose between two different spiritualities, and the first kind said, you need to believe this in order to be part of the in-group, and the second kind said, make the world a better place, I choose that second kind every time. So as far as,
wow.
as far as you know, what matters to me, I think you're there. I think you're doing it. And so I have a tremendous amount of respect
that.
For that, regardless of what label anyone wants to put on it.
Thank
you.
Absolutely. That was really well said.
Well, thank you, my friend. You know, very quickly here, I should wrap up, but very quickly here, there are five questions I like to ask everyone that I interview, actually six, sorry, and I just kind of like to shotgun my way through these questions and get the first answer that comes to your mind, soundbite style, just to kind of get to know you a little bit more beyond the brand. So can we do that right now before we wrap up?
Absolutely. Sure. I'm in no hurry.
All right. So I want to know, who's the most influential person living in the world right now?
Living in the world right now?
Right now.
That's a really good question. Now, I immediately was going to answer this woman by the name of Irma Bombeck. She's not alive, though. so that doesn't count. But she's like my most influential person. I think she's fantastic. If you Google her, you'll know why.
I'm going to give you that because apparently she's alive in your heart. So I'm going to give you that one.
I think she's done wonders for breaking through barriers and helping people. And she actually wrote a really funny humor column in the 60s that was aimed at housewives to get them to lighten up a little bit. And she changed. She changed the face of a lot of things. And I think that that's what we're doing right now with TMF Project. And I think it's really cool. Gosh, right now, can I get back to you on that one? Can I answer that one last? I have to think about it.
No, you don't have to get back to me. I'm accepting Irma. That submission is good because she's alive in your heart, and you're alive enough. So
All right.
We're going to go with that one. Yeah. So these are my questions. I can accept whatever answers I want. All right. What's the best book you ever read?
Ooh. You know what? I'm going to answer this honestly. It's not about business. The best book I've ever read is called She's Come Undone by Wally Lamb. Mm. And I've read the book probably 7 times. I think it's a really great testament to what it's like to actually be human. And it tells the story of a girl named Dolores. And I really like the book. Business-wise, one of my favorites is called Personality Not Included, but mostly because that's what we do at TMF Project, is help people break those barriers and get more personality into their business and lives.
You're great at that. How do you define success?
I think it's a feeling. I don't think it's something that you can ever really, really put a tangible check mark next to. But you know, I think you really do feel when you've been successful or when you've got that feeling of satisfaction. I think that's it. There are times when I've worked in the past so hard. I've made a lot of money doing some things. But I never really felt good about it, and so I don't think that qualifies. But there are other times when I've done the most simplest of things. I've taken entire days to write one paragraph of a book that I'm writing. And when I finally nail that one paragraph, and it's everything I ever imagined it to be, I feel so good. That feeling of satisfaction, I feel like that's success because I know that I really, 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 really gave it my all. I really did everything I could to make that the best goddamn paragraph that I possibly could have. That makes sense?
That makes plenty of sense. I love that so much. What's your favorite pick-me-up when you're feeling down or need an energy boost? Next question. I got the answer. I got it. Okay, next question. I'm skipping that one. I'm skimming it. I honestly think you answered it. Number what's the worst advice you ever received?
Let me think. Thinking back to my corporate America days and when I was young and very impressionable. And I remember even my first job right out of college. I remember this one woman who I looked up to so much. I've run into her recently, and I can't help but think, gosh, you know, at the time when I was working there, she just seemed so important. And someone like that I really needed to listen to. But if I had just taken the time to really do my own thing and follow my own ideas, I think things would have worked out better. So I think the worst advice anyone can ever be given was listen to your elders or listen to people who have been there and done that, because their experience is completely different than yours. And I think that too often we always turn to everybody else and their own experiences so we can kind of gauge what we're supposed to be doing or the right way to do things. And honestly, I've had the most success doing things the wrong way and doing things the way that I wanted to do them.
Last one. What's your favorite word in the English language?
Hippopotamus. I know that right off the top of my head. And you know, it's actually my favorite in Spanish too. Hipopótamo. Hipopótamo. It's the best.
Well, that correlates very neatly with my favorite song. It's the Flight of the Conchords when they sing the "I'm a Hip Hop Hippopotamus." You ever heard that?
Oh my God! Don't make me look bad. I don't know that song. What's it called?
Okay, I'm sharing that with you on Twitter. It's coming at you today.
I'm pretty sure that you should edit this podcast so the intro and the ending has like "I'm a hippopotamus." Fading in and out.
I think I definitely need to get like the rights to that and hook that up.
Yeah, hey, that's kind of a disappointing one because I feel like I should have some kind of great meaning behind my favorite word in the English language, but I don't. I just think it's amazing.
Oh, you just found it though. You just created this experience. So now you know you have a theme song. By the way, I love how like on your website you have like the different shops. And then there's one that says thrift shop. And when I clicked on it, I was like, thrift shop? Like, she has a thrift shop? Like, what would that even look like online? And then I clicked on it. And I won't even tell the listeners what's there. Like, you just have to go to themiddlefingerproject.org for yourself and be sure to check out the thrift shop link, the best online thrift shop.
I'm so glad because I never get emails about that. I always thought that someone somewhere in the world would think that was hilarious and email me about it. I never have received a single comment or message about that thing. I don't know.
Well, there you go. Best online thrift shop in the world. Ashley, it's such a pleasure to chat with you today. I really do hope this is the first of more conversation with you. Can you tell our listeners if there's anything you have going on that they ought to check out, where they can find
you? Sure. Well, first of all, you should check out this Facebook page, facebook.com/TMF Project, mostly because I say outlandish things over there, but also because we've got a whole community of people that really do. They comment back and forth. They help one another out. They chill. They say funny stuff there, too. And I really, really love being on the Facebook page. So I would say that. You know, the second thing I would say is we're doing a lot of stuff. We have a lot of things going on, and it's, you know, not everything is for everyone, but in line with this conversation, that first book that I wrote when I was having a really bad experience was called You Don't Need a Job, You Need Guts. And I think that was almost my rally cry at the time because I was damn determined to make it happen. I took that book down off maybe a year or two ago because by then my ideas had become a little outdated and they really wanted to update it, but also it felt really personal to me. So I will say that for the month of October, we're starting a really new cool initiative that I have not told anyone about yet. I still haven't hammered down a name, but I think it might actually be called You Don't Need a Job, You Need Guts. And what we want to do is just, you know, help those people that had it in their heads they were going to do something great this year for themselves, and they haven't done it yet. So we're going to do it through October, November, December. We want to lead some groups to give support and help people actually do what they want to do. And we're re-releasing the book. So I've edited everything. I'm going through it. It's actually a completely different piece of work from its first iteration. But I'm really excited about it. I think it's meaningful, and I think it's really cool, just a testament to show what can happen in just a few years.
You know, I second that motion for everyone to check that out. I read the first iteration, and I'm excited about, you know, checking out the updated, revised edition as well. Ashley, it's been a real pleasure chatting with you.
PK, thank you so much. You are absolutely a saint. I adore you.